Recording's going. This is the afternoon call of the Indie Contributors Call. It's February 3rd, and afternoon in North America, in the United States, North America, which is early morning, not too early morning, but morning for Asia and New Zealand. So we were talking, Keith, about we're struggling to keep all the different work streams working together smoothly. There's a bit of overlap, especially as we start moving parts of LibIndy to Aries. And so we've been trying to figure out the right way to handle that. I was thinking this call would be really good because we get BC Gov in and Sovereign Foundation in and the Matter team. But a lot of people have conflicts in the afternoons, I guess. So we were wondering if we should discontinue this call going forward and just focus on the morning call. Do you have a preference on that, Keith?
I'm an Eastern. It's quitting time for me today. So yeah, I would prefer.
That's what I figured for most people. Yeah.
Yeah. And the morning call is meant to be more convenient for Eastern US and Europe anyway. So it's just every 2 weeks people we're getting out of sync. So, thanks for your feedback on that. I'll go ahead and cancel this afternoon call. Stop bothering you about it. But before you quit today, we've been keen to discuss with you Indy 2305, which we talked last about just before we all went on Christmas break.
Well, forgotten what that is.
That's the one where we're having a hard time with Kubernetes environments because the IP address needs to be a list instead of a single port number. And went through, we had the conversation in the call in early December. And then we had a bunch of internal conversations as a team. And I think we decided that what your original proposal was is the right thing to do.
Okay.
But now the question is, are you going to implement it?
I ask for feed. I can take a stab at it, but I need someone to point me to the right place in the code to, which is what I ask for folks to do. And I don't, did he respond? Saw it?
I'm just looking through. I remember we had the verbal conversation about it. And then I thought Sergey K gave you the details.
He responded, but I think he was misunderstanding. And I can't remember. Do I have the last response in here? Or did he respond afterwards?
Sergey K responded after your last response. And then we had a bunch of additional conversation.
Okay. Well, I'll try to read up on this. I haven't looked at it in a while.
Okay. So the summary is the proposal to put a port for outbound communication, make it a list of IP addresses and ports for outbound communication is a great proposal. And it took some back and forth before we were convinced that we understood it. But our end result is, we like the idea. Daniel Hardman and I were initially concerned that you were talking about inbound ports as well, and that could break things.
No.
Yeah. So once that was clear, it was like, I guess it's not a concern then. So we just documented that. If you still have questions about what exactly to do, I can get the team to answer that. But this issue is just stuck with what the next step is. So if that's the next step, put the comment in and we'll make sure to move forward.
Okay. I will do that.
Excellent.
Can I read more about this? I assume just in the ticket?
Yeah. So the basic idea is in Kubernetes, it bounces between outbound ports. And that breaks all the whitelisting that the sovereign stewards use to prevent DOS attacks.
Yep.
So shouldn't the pool ledger just let you have more than one outbound port? And the first answer was no. That just seems crazy. Why would you do that? And then the second answer was, well, actually, I guess it just makes sense. So we decide yes.
Is the pool then – I'll go read this and then I'll ask you some questions after this. Because I don't have enough context and I don't want to spend too much time on that.
Yep. Though with Keith here, you can ask – it's a good time to ask questions. So.
Well, I guess the biggest question for me was like right now the outbound port, as far as I understand in the nodes, is being used for 0MQ connections. And the 0MQ is being initiated by the clients. Does that mean that the clients then need to be more aware of it, or am I just completely thinking of this wrong?
This is not this is for a validator, like let's say IBM validator is calling, is making a consensus call basically to another validator.
Yeah, this is validator communication rather than, that makes sense.
Yeah, rather than client communication. Yep.
Yep. Okay, that makes a lot more sense then.
And you'll find a lot of the conversation was us clarifying exactly what was going on, questions like that. So it's a natural question.
And is this supposed to improve throughput? Is that kind of the thinking behind it? Or is it?
It puts fewer constraint or fewer requirements, unnecessary requirements, I would add, on a validator node. Because if a validator, like for example, our validator is running on a Kubernetes node and it can fail over, it only one is active at a time. But if that node goes down, then it maintains the same inbound IP, but the outbound IP can change. And in order to maintain a single outbound IP, so when I say outbound, I should say source IP address. When I'm making a connection to you, the source IP address of my validator node it comes from a pool of IP. There actually are just two in our case, but it can switch between those two.
Mm-hmm. I think I understand what you're saying. So like from the node perspective and who it's communicating with, the nodes are expecting it to come from a certain IP address. But with a Kubernetes cluster, you may be coming from a different IP address. And so they need to be able to identify that in some way.
Correct.
Okay. That makes sense.
But why do you want to run it on Kubernetes?
Because we want the requirements, the steward requirements for 99.9, whatever the 995% uptime without having some automated way of failing over. I don't know how we can ever meet that.
Yeah, you need some.
I mean, the point. I mean, you could probably just do it with cron. It's just Kubernetes adds so much stuff that you don't need in this case because the consensus and the reliability comes from the network, not from your particular node. So it's kind of a different use case. I mean, we talked about it for a while on ours and just said, yeah, you're right. We don't need it. We don't need to be running on that.
Okay. Well,
but anyway, it's fine.
I think we would need to change the steward framework requirements in my perspective, because no matter you're eventually going to have a hardware failure. And if you have to be able to get back up with the same source IP address, I mean, there are obviously ways of doing sort of like a virtual source IP address solution, but it just puts additional requirements on the validator node that I think are not necessary to do just simply by making this small change.
Yeah. I should also say, Stephen, that when this was first raised by Keith, my response was the same, like, this is a weird Kubernetes thing. But since then, and I've been paying attention, we've had three sovereign stewards report the same issue. All running different environments. One Kubernetes is the Keith's running. We had one running VMware and one running Hyper-V. So it's not, it's anybody who's virtualizing is hitting this problem.
Yeah,
it's fine. I just jumped in the middle of this. We talked about running it on OpenShift, which has even higher challenges with doing that. OpenShift is the
Red Hat
distribution. Yeah. And it's got even higher because you like having to make ports available is just like, that's a no-no in that world. But yeah. I got to say, I never realized that there was a 99.x uptime on Steward. That seems wrong to me. I mean, I would be much more, I'm surprised that it's anywhere close to that because the model ought to be that verifiers can come and go and you swap out new ones that you trust. So, but anyway, that's fine. I don't need to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I would agree. If we, yeah, if the framework, if we change that, then I can understand it, but.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have, that is in the sovereign, what is it called? The sovereign steward technical guidelines that all the stewards sign up to. And it needs a refresh anyway. I went through quite a bit last June where we added the whitelisting for ports and how much memory to have. But I didn't remove anything. And some of that stuff I think represents thinking that's 3 years old now.
Yeah. I mean, the whole purpose of, you know, having, and especially when, if and when, you know, read-only nodes come into play, it's going to be a huge help for that, because then you can just swap out, almost dynamically swap out verifiers. That's what I'm assuming anyway, but again, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need to.
Yeah, I suspect that both over time will need to occur. And I think that's really what it comes down to, is when the architecture changes from validators to validators and observers. I mean, there's ways that we can do this now that are somewhat simpler. Actually, I don't even know, because I don't necessarily know the best approach for an observer. So either way, I think we're going to need to handle both cases eventually. But we just don't have the demand yet, I think, on the ledger for that.
Grab some notes real quick. So that's good. So we know the next step on this one. We made a note about the technical requirements. Anything else we need to say about that issue?
Nope.
Okay, so I'm glad to cross that one off. That was a good conversation we had just before everyone on holiday. So it's glad to get that picked up again. Oh, the other thing, Keith, that came from that, you were already on holiday when we had this. So it was just before Christmas. We did talk about what could be the downside, if any. It was, if people are opposed to this change, like, what are they afraid of? And, of course, the answer is security. If we have whitelists, but the outbound could be arbitrary, then that could theoretically, an attacker could manage to take over a node that somebody else has whitelisted because it's too big. Said maybe we should put some limit to how big of a subnet or how many IP addresses you should have. Whatever limit we pick would be kind of arbitrary, but just having a limit would allow, give us an upper bound on what the risk is.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of feedback.
Okay. Yeah, that's reasonable. Like, and I'm okay with not even allowing, you know, subnet mask or anything, and just saying, you know, here's a list of IP addresses, and we could even bound it to say no more than, you know, X number.
Yeah. I think a list would be fine. Our concern was that if you're in Kubernetes and you're popping up anywhere in the subnet, does that work?
But no, actually, well, at least in our, now I think different clouds, you know, may be different, but ours, you know, we have, I think it's a list of, honestly, just two IP addresses right now, and maybe three, I can't remember. I think as long as we, I think if we start out with just a list, and if we want to put a limit on the number that can be in that list, that's fine with me. But.
Excellent. I'll put a comment about that in a moment. Very good. Anything else on this topic? That was productive. Next topic is that I had is for Mike. He's not on the call, so I'm going to pop that down. So I did have a number of questions for the BC Gov team, but I should pause and say, today, instead of having a formal agenda, I just listed all my coordination questions I had for other people. But Keith, Kyle, do you guys have questions, coordination items you want as well?
No, unfortunately, I'm going to have to drop, though.
Okay, I appreciate you joining, Keith. I know it's late.
All right, sorry.
No worries. Thank you.
Kyle, Kyle, you want to do work update? Have any questions about what's going on in the broader community before I go into my to my hot list?
I'm kind of interested in what's going on with this Aries VDR, especially after the DidCom or the Did Working Group update. And then also the Anon creds stuff, trying to get an understanding of that. And I think I need to follow up with Mike on that though, because I'm looking to gauge WASM compatibility. And I saw that some of the people at Sovereign were working on that. And so I didn't know if I wanted to chase that down or if that got deprioritized and that makes sense for us to do. So those are the three main things that I'm trying to think about is what's happening in terms of the conversion of Aries, where non-creds is at, and how we can integrate that using WASM.
Great. I didn't have the WASM question, but I had all the others. Your list is the same as my list. So, Stephen, we were just talking just before you joined. Kyle has a conflict at this time most Mondays now. So we're trying to decide if we should continue this call. I'm torn because without Kyle, we don't need this time zone slot, but I feel like we need more coordination in general between BCGov and Evernym and Matter and everybody, specifically related to the VDR and the Anon creds. I was surprised when I was watching the recordings for last week's calls when Mike said, "Hey, I started an Anon creds thing." I'm like, "Wait, I thought Andrew White had just started one, and I know Sergey started one, so there's three." And we kind of did the same thing on Aries Shared Util versus what he's calling Aries Core Rust.
We were pretty surprised at that too.
Exactly.
For what it's worth, I think that's somewhat valuable to have three people approach the problem early, but then coordinate quickly after, because it allows people to come from different perspectives and different angles, which is what ideally we're after in the Aries as well. So,
yeah,
I think there's value to it, but as long as we can catch it and coordinate quickly, that's when it makes a difference.
So before we get into the details, Stephen, do you have an opinion about meeting this week every time? Does it work well for us to coordinate, or should we just go to the every 2 weeks on the other time zone and do the rest offline?
Yeah, I mean, let's go to 2 weeks, and then if we need to, go to the every week at the same time, as opposed to if there's nobody going to join us from the other side of the world, then we can do it at other times.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm fine with this one. I don't know. I just keep missing this one because I was closer. I was only 11 minutes late this time, so better than the last time when I got on a bus thinking it was at a 4 o'clock meeting and realized that, oh no, it's at 3 o'clock. So I missed it entirely.
Yeah. It was the first 5 minutes when I was alone that I was thinking,
I missed the first five as well. So, but yeah, the main thing from my perspective is I've got things going on, at this timeline. And for the most part, I've just been taking notes anyways, because a lot of the discussions happen in the other meeting. And then I'll follow up with, you know, like Andrew and with Richard and you, Stephen, and stuff like that. So,
yeah,
I think that's working out all right. And so I'd rather have fewer meetings for me, as well as I think you guys would probably want the same thing.
So my original proposal was we move this once every 4 weeks, but I think we decided cancel.
Let's just cancel this one and go with the mornings. I mean, I'm more used to those, so I'm good with those.
And I'll message you guys if I got questions and want to jump on a call with you.
Exactly.
Okay. We'll take that as a decision. So on when we're talking about the different work efforts going, I think it's funny that last fall, everybody was so keen to get started on the wallet/KMS and nobody really did start. And now we're in February and we've got three implementations of Anon creds and two implementations of utils and no wallet. So,
yeah.
When I was talking with Sergey about this morning, he said, fantastic. I just wish people would start with the design document. You know, that's the way Sergey's team's trained to look at the world. And even with Andrew's stuff, they said he's making great progress, but there's no overall design. So it's really hard for us to understand where to pitch in or how best to advance things.
I will say that with Andrews, there's no way there could be, because he just didn't know nearly enough when he started. He didn't know Rust. He didn't know even what the current design was. He just didn't know anything. So he just went in saying, okay, what am I going to do? And has done all that. It's got nothing to do with whether to do a design doc or not. There would have been no design doc up front for what he did.
Yeah.
Personally, I think what's come out of it is really, really good. So hopefully that's going to bear up, but it looks like it so far. So
I feel very similar to that. You know, it's very much code first thinking. And in my experience, like, just sitting down and writing code is so much more helpful than trying to design it in your head. And I think it's allowed us to progress better. So, I mean, I can go in and read the code and see what's going on. I don't understand entirely what he's after, but, you know, I don't need to until he's trying to integrate it, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't advocate one or the other, quite frankly. I would just say it was necessary. Andrew couldn't have done any differently because, you know, in December he had no idea what BDR was about. He didn't know how Indy worked internally and so on and so forth. And on Creds is possibly similar. He also mentioned today maybe he should work on Wallet now, which I thought was kind of interesting. So I'm kind of open. I definitely didn't know about what Sergey was doing with Anon Creds. I am very anxious. The reason I was enthused with Anon Creds was I was worried no one was going to do anything, and we were going to sit with Anon Creds 2.0 in Ursa and nowhere else.
Yeah. Hey, and I want to clarify, I exaggerate a little bit. Your team said, we want to create Indy Aries Anon Creds and got us all excited. But then your team's making such progress on the VDR, we thought, well, if we can't help there, we can help on Anon Creds. So we fear we start the design doc. So we haven't made much progress. So the goal was to coordinate with you. Yeah.
Okay. What our thought is, I mean, there's one of two ways that the VDR could go, and this is sort of the plan, was that Andrew would just sort of finish off and then either hand it to you guys or hand it to Stephen Klump to continue on with, and then he would move on to Anon Creds just to build on the momentum of his knowledge that he's gained in working through what's there. So that's kind of where we were thinking about it, was let's get him just on some different topic, and either one would be fine. But what I definitely don't want is that we sit with Anon Creds not making progress, because I think that is actually the most important.
And the good news is Mike's starting to make some. I'm really keen to see Andrew start on the Wallet. At least my goal is for us to have the framework, not the formal framework, but the rough outline, the scaffolding of where we want the Aries shared utilities to shared libraries to go fairly quickly. So then we can all start working within that common scaffolding.
Yeah.
And there was some hesitancy about Evernim, you know, tackling too many of these or any of these because people wanted to take ownership. So I'm really keen to see if Andrew could at least move Sergey's Wallet, where he pulled into its own thing, and drop that into the Aries KMS, and the Postgres one into Aries, you know, Aries KMS, whatever you want to call it, just so that we have that scaffolding, that first commits established, then it makes it a lot easier for us to say, okay, we understand what somebody's doing. Let's go help them, as opposed to having people feel like we took over.
Yep. I mean, I'm not quite sure. I mean, Andrew is thinking in the next day or two, he's going to be finished with a chunk of VDR. You've got a good point that there's no design document, which we can get some writing done on that. I think that actually would be a really good idea. Always a good idea. A retrospective design doc that says, here's what it is. But other than that, I mean, we're going to have Stephen look at it from a unit test perspective and functional tests. He's been brilliant at making those. Our coverage at ACAPI is now up to 89%. So we're pretty excited about that. And Stephen Klomp's been huge in doing that. So.
And so this list is the one Sergey and I put together of what the next step, what Sergey sees the next steps. And
yeah,
sounds like you already worked on most of them. Of course, Andrew mentioned that he didn't have a lot of experience with the form function interface. Obviously, Sergey has a lot of experience there. We're happy to help with that. Any others you
I
can
think Andrew's actually here. Gone ahead and started with that.
Fantastic.
And I don't know if you've seen some of the latest stuff he's doing where like not asking all of the nodes of the ledger for consensus, just asking the minimum number, and then only if you don't get consensus do you add more and stuff like that, which is really interesting. It's because it turns out it you do get a pretty significant speed increase when things are operating well.
You do get a speed increase, and with the BLS signatures, you have confidence in your answers, but it does erode one of the Byzantine attack methods we have in consensus. You can detect a primary node who's deliberately slowing down the network because every other node gets every request and can see when those get delayed. But when clients stop querying everybody, then we lose that guarantee. Well, it's not a guarantee either way, but we lose that heuristic.
Yeah.
Did you have a comment, Kyle, or did you freeze? Think kind of froze. But that's definitely something we'd love to talk with Andrew about more, because we've had some of the same conversations about what we should do, and so we get to coordinate with him. The other thing is we're really keen to just integrate it into libindy and have libindy start calling Andrew's code instead of what's currently in libindy, and libindy is going to shrink over time and always be backwards compatible. That would be fantastic. It gives us a good way to exercise this code.
That would be super interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're happy to help with that.
Okay.
And we want to get Andrew's code into Hyperledger. Let's make it the
official. Yeah. That wouldn't be a big deal. I'm sure. I mean, he's got just a couple of days left at most to figure out to wrap it. So we could see about that after that.
The one comment we had about before moving to Hyperledger, we think functionally, it's plenty good enough. Like, we can move it over and start collaborating. But we wanted the first commit to reference the previous history so people could find that history. So it does require a squash and a rewriting history. We need to do it as quickly as possible before other people pull off of that code, so before it gets in Hyperledger. But if Andrew could do that one big, that one force to the history, I think it'll help a lot with people in the future saying, where did this code come from?
Yeah, I'll ask him about that. I don't even know what that means. I saw that in there and thought, that's interesting. Kind of late for that first commit.
Yeah. It does allow you to rewrite history. It just breaks all everybody who's forked. So we need to do it before we get too many forks.
Yeah. That's funny.
Excellent. So, that was good coordination. Thank you for that.
I just dropped out in between, but I had a question regarding this. You know, I just forgot it. So we're going to keep going. And if it comes back, I'll message you guys.
When it comes back, feel free to cut in. Adam, do you have audio?
I do.
Excellent. Most of my other questions were for your team. We don't have a formal agenda today. We did talk about whether we should get rid of the afternoon call. Kyle can't make it in the future. He's got a conflict. So we decided we're just going to cancel and focus on the morning calls for coordination. But
I like that idea.
Okay.
That.
Good.
I just remembered.
Yes, sir.
Are you guys planning to do wrappers with the FFI, or are you planning to let that just be built into the agent frameworks?
We plan for the Indy Aries VDR to expose a C callable interface that the agent frameworks would call directly. We do not plan for Indy Aries to deliver language specific wrappers for that VDR.
Perfect. That was one, in my experience, one of the more difficult challenges. And so I found it very useful to not have to write that. And I think you can manage unit testing through a Rust wrapper, which is what we did in Indy SDK, from a API standpoint.
That's exactly what we're thinking. And okay. Yes, it's your feedback about the thin language wrappers that made us think, let's just get out of this thing, thin language wrapper business, and let all the frameworks provide whatever rich interface they want.
Well, they can also determine how they want to use it and stuff. So yeah, okay. That's exactly what I was going to advocate for. So cool. We're on the same page.
Your advocacy last year is our current thinking. So
cool.
Okay, so Adam, just catch you up. We caught up on the VDR. Andrew's making good progress. He's looking to hand it off and start his next thing soon. And Evernote's happy to pick that up. Hopefully Stephen Klump can pick it up and we can work with Stephen. We really like this process of working alongside your team. We've enjoyed doing that with Andrew and look to continue with Stephen. So we talked a bit about next steps there. Adam, most of the remaining – oh, the other thing is we talked about the Aries KMS is one of the next things that Andrew could work on. And I'm really keen to see at least the wallet crate get moved into the Aries KMS so that we have that basis of what we're building and can start improving
it. To be clear, that decision is not made. We are still leaning towards the non-creds, but we want to find out what else is. We're trying to figure out what Mike's talking about, what he's doing.
Yeah, and that's fine. Thank you. But Adam, for anybody on the call, we're hoping somebody is going to take that wallet crate that Sergey made and move it into the Aries KMS so that we have the KMS, and then we have the Postgres and the SQLite plugins to that KMS. And then we have enough structure. Everyone has been advocating this for a long time, but we're a little nervous to take the first step because people have said that they have some concerns. So we just want to know what people if nobody's going to take that approach, then we'll work on other things. So that's...
Yeah. I've seen a few people working on some things, so I'm excited for someone to just start moving so I can follow.
Or you could move and we'll follow you. Okay, so the next topic is Mike commented in the last call, in the last Aries call, he's working on an Anon Creds, and he's working on an Aries Core Rust. And Stephen and I both said, interesting, we're kind of working on that too. So we want to get a better idea of what Mike is doing, how far he's made. I did look briefly at the repo. It's got a handful of commits. How fast does Mike expect to – do you have any information about any of this?
I don't.
Okay. Really, really keen to know design doc, schedule plan,
things. He has more code than is committed here because I've seen him working on it more recent than 6 days ago.
Okay. Really keen. When Steve and I talked about this in the past, we felt like Anon Creds – that there's an indie specific approach to Anon Creds, which is where we'd start. So we were thinking it'd be an indie repo rather than an Aries repo. It'd be the indie implementation of Anon Creds for Aries. And we're just wondering if Mike's trying to abstract that more and put it straight into Aries, or if he's starting with the indie stuff and kind of forklifting it over. We just, any information you can get on that from Mike would be great.
I'm of particular interest on that as well. Because we've been looking at how non-creds would work with different ledgers and stuff as well. Just trying to explore, is it even possible? And so that's one of those things where it's like, because this is one of the major factors that I think is going to play into getting everybody interoperable, is if we can expose this functionality to other people, like hearing Ori talk about it. If there's another JS library, he said he's on board to use it, is kind of the sentiment that I got from him. Now, I'm somewhat putting words in his mouth. I'm sure there's caveats to that. And so I don't know the full details, but that's the general sentiment I got from it. So as well as I've seen that in the past from the Uport guys when we first talked about Aries in the first place. So this is what I'm trying to understand is, what are the possibilities here? Can we abstract early, given that we understand how it works with Indy, and if we do that, how does that affect timeframes?
Yeah,
because I don't want it to hurt.
And Nathan's really keen to have an Aries generic Anon Creds implementation that multiple ledgers can implement, I think it'd be great. And if that's what Mike's doing, fantastic. I'm concerned about waiting to break up Libindy until we answer those big questions, because they sound like they'll take a long time. So I'm really keen to get Libindy into littler pieces quicker, just forklift the current indie implementation, and then we can figure out how to abstract it over time. That's the way I've been looking at it.
I don't think they actually will. So I've been exploring kind of the requirements about around non-creds. The revocation registry is the only thing that actually needs chronological lineage, in terms of like ordering. And so that needs to actually be anchored onto a ledger. So if you're doing this with something like Sidetree, you need to actually go through the Sidetree protocol, but for everything else, you just need to be able to publish it in a publicly viewable place. So you could do something like IPFS or a web server.
Yeah.
And so this is where I'm thinking that in both of those instances is actually quite easy, because you're essentially just running an HTTP server. So I think it's simpler than we think. And the other thing that I'm thinking about here is, how does this play into the conversation about ledgers? Because we've had the conversation of if they should move ledgers or not, or if we're going to keep maintaining any. I don't know where that's been, but at least this de-risks us from the pressure of having to maintain Indy. If we have that and we choose to bite off that large chunk, then we at least have the option to be able to move to other ledgers if we want.
Yeah. I can't answer that question really briefly. We're pretty happy with it where Indy is now from a stability perspective. And okay. So our focus is rich schemas, like new features that we want that get, you know, Anon Creds too. New features we want to expose to customers, and libindy to Aries migration, getting Aries core libraries that Evernim specifically can collaborate on with Everlib people. We have, in addition to that, been looking more formally now at other ledgers. We looked at Stellar, we're looking at Tendermint, we want to look at Hot Stuff. It's really just research though. We don't have any opinions yet. We're just kind of like, what are the pros and cons? How would this compare? If we were to use it, how expensive would it be? And I don't have any findings to answer. I just know Sergey looked at it after he got back from vacation last week.
We've explored similar thinking. So, essentially I just see a lot of, benefits in it. But I don't understand the risk quite yet in doing it. And so that's why I was pointing it out.
Yeah, that's good. Biggest risk is the risk of unknown. We really understand Indy now. We understand it really well. So it's just a shame. It'd be sad to move away from that, but I don't know. Want to make sure we're informed. Steven, were you trying to cut in a minute ago?
I was not. Sorry about that.
That's fine. Just want to make sure you have a chance to say anything. So really keen. That was my summary of our thinking on Anon Creds. Steven, did you have anything else to share? Or was that a good summary of the conversations we've had?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, the big thing we've got to get to for us is getting to revocation in a practical implementation, and I don't think Tails files are practical, so we're very anxious to get that. We think we can use it for small use cases, but not anything of significance. I think that since the overall scheme is the same, whether it's Tails file or Merkle tree, we're not wasting a lot of code by moving forward where we are now. But you know, getting to Anon Creds too is a much bigger thing. To us as well, delegatable credentials is absolutely huge. And the longer away that is, the worse things are.
Yep.
So that's our motivation for getting it. Revocation with Merkle tree and delegatable credential with including revocation, but the whole chaining them together. Big deal.
So I have heard Microsoft is taking a look at ZKPs at this point. They just put out a paper recently from Microsoft Research to do something called Spartan, Mike is aware of this paper, but my understanding is revocation works differently. So just be aware of that, and we might need to figure out what they're doing, what their plans are, to see if we can keep it coordinated.
So I asked Daniel Buckner on this, and he had never heard of IRSA and didn't know what there was a white paper on IRSA and didn't look at it or anything like that. Like, it's such bullshit. That's,
well, the people working on it are Microsoft Research.
Daniel's been involved. They've written, he's playing with it, but he's just not looking around at anything else, which is,
yeah,
to me insane. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens and so on, but it's very frustrating that they would have gone off and not even looked at where they know the right, the best, most advanced ZKP work, practical work exists. It just irritates me. It's fine, and I'm interested in what they get, but man, that's irritating.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, and this is why I don't want to chase them down over it, but at least if we're aware of it, and my understanding is Mike is, and he's aware of the different technical trade-offs of it. So I'm letting him, you know, kind of decide how that works, because I have no clue. And I'll just try and gather the practical implications of it all.
If you can find the link easy to drop into the notes, it'd be interesting. I looked, I couldn't find it.
For which one?
Microsoft's paper on...
It's called Spartan. I will go...
So Spartan's their new browser, it looked like.
No, there's a Spartan ZKP paper that came out from Microsoft.
Looks like Sparta.
Oh, that might
be. Just looking at the screen you were showing, Richard, it said Sparta.
I'll
see if I can track it around, and if I can, then I'll let you know.
Yeah, I see right at the top there, it says Sparta.
Is this Microsoft Research?
May 22nd. Oh, maybe that's not Microsoft. Oh, okay.
I don't know. You could share it.
I definitely got the impression that they had not released anything yet about it, so I'm not shocked it's not around.
Yeah, there's no early release as far as I understand. This is just the paper, and it's floated around the cryptographic community so far, because I've seen this mentioned in a few different areas.
Okay, Spartan. Yeah, got it.
Good. But they're looking to do an implementation, and I don't know how that implementation plays in with verifiable credentials, because this, as a cryptography, has applications outside of our work, I'm sure.
Yeah. So the next topic I want to mention is the Aries Shared Util Library we were talking about. I'm not sure exactly what we should call it, but it's the place where we want to stick pack unpack. And I'm really keen to get it started, because as rich schemas matures, we're going to need a place. I spent a while with Ken and Adam and Brent a couple weeks ago, and it's clear that as that matures, we're going to need some other utility functions for encoding and decoding and how to pull a proof presentation, all these things. And so it seems like we're going to need a utility library. So that's where, Adam, I'm really keen to know what Mike's trying to do there. Sergey and I were talking about what's the right thing to do. Do we want to refactor as we move? I'm keen to just forklift things. But Sergey was saying, you know, if with pack unpack specifically, with all the new suggestions for pack unpack, do we want to actually improve it while we move it instead of just, how did he put it? He said, we can definitely forklift it in a way that's indie specific, but do we want to take the time to figure out how it should look in an Aries world as we start this process? I'm keen to just forklift, but I was curious if other people, if other people shared the concern about that the current pack unpack is too indie specific. We need to change a lot for Aries and DidCom, and where do we put other rich schemas functions?
So my take on this has been, it would be nice to do refactor. I think you start with a lift and fork. But my biggest concern here is that putting these things in separate repos, but making the interfaces only work with our packages, essentially causes problems. where you might as well just turn this back into a monolithic SDK again. And so I think it defeats the purpose of trying to separate things out. And so I would hope that we at least can do some refactoring. In the thinking of JWMs and how that plays into it, I think that's where you could defer most of your refactoring to. But then that means that, you know, one version has a bunch of dependencies and the other version can be more decoupled. So we might need to do some better thinking on that. But that's just kind of like my initial thoughts on it, is that we should be trying to decouple these things more. You know, in some cases that's possible, in some cases that's less possible. I think we've gotten that pretty good with the BDR. I think with the KMS, so that's going to be quite difficult. And so that's what I'm trying to take into consideration with that.
Yeah, that's exactly the set of trade-offs we're trying to balance as well. So, Steven, if anybody who wants to take the first stab at that, Adam, Kyle, it'd be great, because then we could see that and start helping the process.
I mean, ideally with the JWM stuff, how it's written is you just pull in a Jose library. And I'm sure there's a Rust Jose library, and if not, then there needs to be. And so, you know, that's kind of the thing behind that, is that you can make your interfaces a little bit simpler, but most Jose libraries are written in such a way that they have their cryptography implementations already built into them. And so, you know, that means that, you know, we're going to have to take a look at how that works, because in some cases you may want to just rely on IRSA instead, which means you may need your cryptography to be pluggable, which is similar to how the Digital Bazaar guys have approached cryptography with the BCJS library.
Yeah. Hey, do you manage the IRSA CI/CD, Kyle?
No.
Okay. The Adam, the other thing we had for Mike was that IS-1222 is blocked because there's no artifacts. So somebody could give that a kick. Whatever you need a kick.
Is that IRSA artifacts?
Yeah. So Artem added a check to IRSA, but no artifacts got spit out in the last 5 days.
Okay, I'll talk with Mike about that when I see him next.
Oh, great. Excellent. I know that it's an inconvenient time. I appreciate everybody joining because it is really productive. I really benefit from collaborating really closely with your teams. So Kyle, you're not going to be able to join the next morning call, but Adam and Steven, it'd be really great if Andrew and Ken and, you know, as many of the architects can join as possible, so we can make a lot of progress on the next call.
Yeah.
I was thinking the next call, we keep the agenda really open and just talk rich schemas, VDR, have this kind of conversation where we just make sure we're all moving in the same direction.
Yep. Sounds good.
A good plan.
Quick question for
you. Next Monday.
Ah, go ahead.
Yes, next Monday. And the challenge, though, is that Mike can never make that call because it conflicts with one of his other crypto calls. So we'll have to coordinate without Mike. But we can, you know, he hasn't been able to come to this one either. So I guess it's the same. But we'll need to work with Adam. You'll be our proxy.
Okay.
Sounds good. Hey, Adam, I saw that you were doing a WASM package on IRSA. Are you still working on that? Or was that just kind of like an exploration?
That was a personal exploration. It wasn't like I had hours associated with work. I kind of slowed down just before the holidays and I haven't picked it back up. Okay. I haven't abandoned it yet, but it's not something I'm actively playing with at the moment.
Yep. I was just curious because I saw that and I was like, I would like to do similar things. I've talked with Mike about it, but I didn't know if you had intentions of doing that. We're not going to get it done right away, but we'd like to use it. And seeing some of this Aries and OnCred stuff, you know, that may make me rethink whether or not I want WASM directly on IRSA or WASM directly on Aries and OnCred. So, you know, I don't know if that's even possible, quite honestly. It'll be written in Rust, but I know that there's a lot of caveats that come with that. So should I follow up with you or with Mike on that?
I'm interested in finishing what I was trying to do in the very least. So if you involved me, that would be nice. I remember I was running into debugging issues, and I was having troubles converting between pipes, between Rust and WASM, where I was going to rewrite create credential definition to not use builder method types.
Okay.
But that's what, but it's kind of, I think it's kind of funny because there's no actual secure running environment in the browser. So to like do anything with private keys in the browser is kind of not suggested, kind of foolish. So I don't know where it's going to go.
There is some usage. I mean, if you take a look at the Web Crypto API, they have some protection levels where the API is designed to prevent extraction of keys, and they can do it through the browser's, I believe it's local storage. They don't specify where you do it, but there is some general thinking, and most browsers take a secure pattern. So that might be worth looking into, is how Web Crypto manages that. It's not perfect, but you know, it is doable, I guess.
Oh, okay. So as we get further, I'd like to investigate that. That's okay. Good to know. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. The other topics we should discuss today.
That's it for me. I think we cut it right on time, given I showed up 5 minutes late. You wondered if we should even have the call, so
I do find it really productive when we can coordinate. So I appreciate you guys joining. So thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks.
Take care. See ya.
See y'all.
Thanks, bye.